from the beginning of the year, there's in essence been a plan that I guess God is revealing to me one Shabbat at a time. Before the year began, He gave me this sight. He gave me this vision. It's like, you need to let everybody know who they are. And the first part of that was identifying that we're not angels. I myself said, I'm no angel. But we looked at the functioning responsibilities of angels. Primarily, they're messengers of God, and no less, they are warriors for God. Upon identifying what or who we are in terms of what our functioning is, the next phase of that was identifying who you belong to. You are the potter's work, going all the way back to creation. He formed you from the dust, which was mud, and then He breathed life into you. His first work as a potter. Everything else He spoke into existence. So in establishing who you are and what your mission is, it's time that we unpack the details of the mission. Last Shabbat, I shared with you the first aspect of the mission. The first priority of Yeshua and Shaul was conveying the message of the gospel to their own brethren first. We saw this in their own words. I'm going to give you the full narrative of what's going on here, because within this narrative of Matthew chapter 15, starting in verse 22, conveys the second aspect of the mission. Starting in verse 22 of Matthew 15, a woman from Canaan who was living there came to Him pleading, "Sir, have pity on me, son of David. My daughter is cruelly held under the power of demons." But Yeshua did not say a word to her. Then His Talmidim came to Him and urged Him, "Send her away, because she is following us and keeps pestering us with her crying." She was the squeaky wheel. Then Yeshua said, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." You would think she would have turned away and left, dejected, hopeless. But she came, fell at His feet and said, "Sir, help me." He answered, "It is not right to take the children's food and toss it to their pet dogs." He's talking of the nations here. She said, "That is true, sir, but..." Another but, two buts in a section. "Even the dogs eat the leftovers that fall from the master's table." Then Yeshua answered her, "Lady, you are a person of great trust. Let your desire be granted." And her daughter was healed at the very moment. Yeshua Himself said, "I'm not here for you yet." He didn't say yet, but I'm inflecting yet, because we have a better understanding. But what happened? She persisted. That Yeshua honored her, even though, for lack of another words, it wasn't her time. Her number hadn't been called yet. Gentiles are at the back of the line, so to speak. But it's not that Gentiles are at the back of the line, but that there's an order that God is performing. He's revealing things in order, not out of order. Shaul, Romans chapter 9, verse 1. "I am speaking the truth." Keeping in mind, he's speaking about Jewish and non-Jewish believers in his letter to Rome. "As one who belongs to the Messiah, I do not lie. And also bearing witness is my conscience, governed by the Ruach HaKodesh. My grief is so great, the pain in my heart so constant." that I could wish myself actually under God's curse and separated from the Messiah if it would help my brothers, my own flesh and blood. The burden was so great upon him. He's called to the Gentiles. Yet the burden for other Jewish people is so great that he even says, I wish I was under a curse if only it would bring them to you. He calls them his own flesh and blood. He says the people of Israel, they were made God's children. The Shekinah has been with them. The covenants are theirs. Likewise, the giving of Torah, the temple services and the promises. The patriarchs are theirs. And from them, as far as the physical descent is concerned, came the Messiah who is over all. Do you have a better understanding of why his burden was so great? God revealed so much to Israel and the Jewish people that it's like, how could you not realize this? Yet we're still dealing with this today. We're still dealing with it amongst the nations, within the body of Messiah. There is a blindness, not just on the Jewish people, but within the body of Messiah, not to mention those outside of the body of Messiah. And as we look at Shaul's actions, wherever he traveled, he would go to the synagogue first. Last Shabbat, I conveyed our challenges in taking on this first aspect of the mission. The challenges are numerous, yet not impossible. Sometimes they make you want to beat your head against the wall. Because it's like, how can they be so blind to the very word of God that God has given them? And I shared with you some of the aspects in how they perceive. I talked about the 70 faces of Torah. If that is not a catastrophe waiting to happen, we're experiencing it already. Well, you can see Torah and interpret it in many different ways. All except for one. So today I want to expand on the second aspect. The second part of the mission, equally as significant as the first part, and has been alluded to in the Tanakh, yet not really hidden, just not fully understood. How would the second part come to fruition? What would it look like? Here is one place where Adonai's plan is conveyed. Isaiah chapter 42. Here is my servant, whom I support, my chosen one, in whom I take pleasure. I have put my spirit on him. He will bring justice to the goyim. My servant will bring justice to the nations. He will not cry or shout. No one will hear his voice in the streets. He will not snap off a broken reed or snuff out a smoldering wick. He will bring forth justice according to truth. He will not weaken or be crushed until he has established justice on the earth and the coastlands wait for his Torah. Hopefully you're understanding here that the foundation for this to the nations is not something different or something new, but something that already exists. It's something that the prophets have conveyed. It's something that's been revealed to Moses. For God's righteousness is found through his word. Verse 5, thus says God, Adonai who created the heavens and spread them out, who stretched out the earth and all that grows from it, who gives breath to the people on it and spirit to those who walk on it. I, Adonai, called you righteously. I took hold of you by the hand. I shaped you and made you a covenant for the people. Speaking of Israel here, to be a light to the nations. I gave you this covenant not just for yourselves, but you're going to be a light to everyone else. Verse 7, so that you can open blind eyes, free the prisoners from confinement, those living in darkness from the dungeon. Hundreds of years before Yeshua and Shaul, prophet Isaiah has given this message to convey to the nation. A nation that has been kicked out of its land. A nation that is in exile, separated from God, yet God has not truly done away with them. Consider Isaiah 49, similar in nature. Coastlands, listen to me. Listen, you people far away. Adonai called me from the womb before I was born. He had spoken my name. He has made my mouth like a sharp sword while hiding me in the shadow of his hand. He has made me like a sharpened arrow while concealing me in his quiver. He said to me, "You are my servant, Israel, through whom I will show my glory." But I said, "I have toiled in vain, spent my strength for nothing, futility. Yet my cause is with Adonai, my reward is with my God." So now Adonai says, "He formed me in the womb to be his servant, to bring Yaakov back to him." Because remember, the first part had to do with the nations. And because of Israel's discretions, the message is modified a little bit. So now Adonai, he has formed me in the womb to be his servant, to bring Yaakov back to him, to have Israel gathered to him, so that I will be honored in the sight of Adonai, my God having become my strength. He has said, "It is not enough that you are merely my servant to raise up the tribes of Yaakov and restore the offspring of Israel. I will also make you a light to the nation so my salvation can spread to the ends of the earth." Notice what's going on here. He says he's going to bring justice to the goyim. And where justice resides, mercy follows. He says, "Listen to me. Listen, you people far away." People far away as in close to or close is sort of code for the nations versus the children of Israel. And then he says, "You are to be a light to the nations," plural. Yeshua alludes to this very concept, but does not proceed on his own with this part of the mission. As I had shared with you earlier, he says, "I've come for the house of Israel." Yet he most certainly had mercy on the woman from Canaan, who truly sought after him to heal her daughter. Such a passion plea demonstrated enormous faith that Yeshua recognized, and as such, the woman was rewarded for her faith in Yeshua. We read further of allusions to the message being more than just a message for the Jewish people. In John chapter 10, starting in verse 14, he says, "I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me." Who are his own here? He's referring to the Jewish people. "Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life on behalf of the sheep." This isn't a but it's an also. "Also, I have other sheep, which are not from this pen. I need to bring them, and they will hear my voice. And there will be one flock, one shepherd." One people, one God. Moreover, Yeshua intimated the coming inclusion of Gentiles when he healed the Roman army officers, orderly, in Matthew chapter 8. And of the daughter that we just talked about from the Canaan woman. He ministered to the woman at the well in Samaria in John chapter 4 and prophesied that many would come from the east and from the west to sit with the patriarchs. Come from the east and from the west. Sorry. Yes, I won't give up my day job. I appreciate that. And that some nations, Gentiles, would be judged favorably. The joining of non-Jews to God's people is alluded to again in Matthew 11:52, where the plan to have Yeshua put to death is being hatched, starting in verse 49. But one of them, Caiaphas, who was Kohen Gadol, the high priest that year, said to them, "You people don't know anything." It's a good way to win people and influence them. "You don't see that it's better for you if one man dies on behalf of the people, so that the whole nation won't be destroyed." Now, he didn't speak this way on his own initiative. Rather, since he was Kohen Gadol that year, he was prophesying that Yeshua was about to die on behalf of the nation, and not for the nation alone, but so that he might gather into one the scattered children of Israel. Who is verse 52 talking about? The nations. This concept is the major subject of the book of Acts, Shaul's letters in Romans, Galatians, and Ephesians, and of the book of Revelation. The ingathering of Gentiles has begun, but has not yet been completed. Portions of the Bible have been translated into more than 1,800 languages, but there are still 5,000 languages out there. There are believers in the Messiah and in God's Word among hundreds of peoples, but peoples of other peoples are virtually unreached. The other sheep will continue to be added until what Romans 11:25 conveys, until the Gentile world enters its fullness. We're not there yet. We've got some empty seats in here that still need to be filled. Now multiply that by God. How many empty seats does he still have? So speaking of Shaul, the one tasked with taking the message of Messiah to the nations, knows full well the dynamics of this part of the mission as he writes to those in Ephesus. Everybody go to Ephesians chapter 3. "It is a consequence of this that I, Shaul, am a prisoner of the Messiah on behalf of you Gentiles. I assume that you have heard of the work God in His grace has given me to do for your benefit, and that it was by a revelation that this secret plan was made known to me. I have already written about it briefly. And if you read what I have written, you will grasp how I understand this secret plan concerning the Messiah." Two times already, he talks about a secret plan. In past generations, here he is now unpacking it. It was not made known to mankind, as the Spirit is now revealing it to his emissaries and prophets. And here we go. "That in union with Messiah and through the good news, the Gentiles were to be joint heirs, a joint body, and joint shares with the Jews in what God has promised." Shaul talks of the secret plan being made known to him and is revealing a mystery being Goyim, Gentiles, are to become joint heirs, a joint body, and joint shares with the Jewish people in what Adonai has promised. The concept of Goyim or Gentiles, the nations, being part of Yeshua's overall mission, should not be lost on anyone. Yet it was a challenge in the first century. Gentiles are coming to faith in Messiah. They're receiving the Spirit of God. They're receiving the Ruach HaKodesh. What do we do with them? Fast forward 2,000 years. Jewish people are coming to faith in Jesus Christ. What are we to do with them? Welcome to an alternate reality known as the world. Yet, I joke about this, yet there's something concerning about this dynamic. What seemed foreign 2,000 years ago, the opposite is now true today. Speaking to those in Ephesus, I shared with you chapter 3, but in order to really get a grasp on chapter 3, we need to go back a chapter to chapter 2. Now, keeping in mind, he's speaking to primarily Gentiles who are believers in Ephesus. Verse 1, you used to be dead because of your sins and acts of disobedience. You walked in the ways of the Olam Hazah of the world, and obeyed the ruler of the powers of the air, who would be the adversary, who is still at work among the disobedient. So in other words, this is a mixture of wheat and tares going on that Shaul is talking to. Indeed, we all once lived this way. We followed the passions of our old nature and obeyed the wishes of our old nature and our own thoughts. In our natural condition, we were headed for God's wrath, just like everyone else. One thing I want you to notice about these first three verses, it's all past tense. He's speaking to believers. But, this is a good but, by the way. Usually, it's like you sort of are peeking around the corner. It's like, do I really want to see this but? But God is rich in mercy and loves us with such intense love that even when we were dead because of our acts of disobedience, He brought us to life along with the Messiah. It is by grace that you have been delivered. That is, God raised us up with the Messiah, Yeshua, and seated us with Him in heaven, in order to exhibit in the ages to come how infinitely rich is His grace, how great is His kindness towards us who are united with Messiah Yeshua. How encouraging is this message to somebody outside of the nation? Nations are brought in. God's grace is beyond measure. For you have been delivered by grace through trusting. And even this is not your accomplishment, but God's gift. How much greater is that? I can't even boast about it. But it's what God has done. Even for the goy. Even for the nations. You were not delivered by your own actions. Therefore, no one should boast. I think a few people need to read that verse over again. Because sometimes pride may get in the way of believers. That all we need to do is remember where we were before. Verse 10. For we are of God's making, created in union with the Messiah Yeshua, for a life of good actions, already prepared by God for us to do. So they have embraced the message where Shaul is reminding them of what the power of Adonai produced. Something you did not see, and yet through trust, through faith, you have come to believe. And we will see in a moment just how extraordinary this is. Because verse 11, just as equally as challenging as a but or an also, is a therefore. which in essence is a concluding thought. Therefore, remember your former state, you Gentiles by birth, called the uncircumcised. This wasn't a good label. Because Jewish people at this time would look at them as the uncircumcised, the unclean. At that time, you had no Messiah. You were estranged from the national life of Israel. You were foreigners to the covenants embodying God's promise. You were in this world without hope and without God. How much more in the previous verses where Shaul conveys God's grace, is it so much more real by what he is causing them to remember? But now, verse 13, you who were once far off have been brought near through the shedding of Messiah's blood. For he himself is our shalom, he is our peace. He has made us both one and has broken down the mitzchai, which is the dividing wall, which divided us, by destroying in his own body the enmity occasioned by the Torah, with its commands set forth in the form of ordinances. He did this in order to create in union with himself from the two groups a single new humanity and thus make shalom. And in order to reconcile to God both the single body by being executed on a stake as a criminal and thus in himself killing that enmity. So there's a breaking down of barriers between the nations of the world and that of Israel. And enmity simply means hostility. There's a hostility between the two that Yeshua has brought down. And the enmity, its origin or its source, that he writes, is because of Torah. This enmity between Jews and Gentiles has four components when we look at it. One aspect, Gentile envy of the special status accorded by God to Israel in the Torah. Keeping in mind, no other nation ever established has what Israel has been given. Another aspect of enmity, Jewish pride at being chosen. This can go to your head. How many times when somebody is told that they're special, they're harder to deal with after that? And equally, or you might say the cause and the effect, Jewish pride being the cause, the effect being Gentile resentment of that pride. Then here's the challenge, the fourth aspect. Mutual dislike to each other's customs. This is a common cause of friction between cultures. But in this instance, Jewish customs are different for a unique reason. They did not merely evolve. They were the Jewish people's response to the Torah, with its commands set forth in the form of ordinances. Some of them truly inspired by God, some of them truly inspired by man. To the point that you have to discern the difference between which is good and which isn't. Because not all traditions are good, not all traditions are bad. So this is why it is appropriate to say that the enmity, the hostility between Jews and Gentiles was occasioned by the Torah because it amplifies the distinguishment between Israel and the nations. And I also want you to keep this in mind. How did Shaul identify the nations in Ephesians 2? You were once foreigners of the covenants, but now you have been brought into. So the enmity was destroyed in the Messiah's body when he died for all sinners, Jews and Gentiles alike. Whoever catches a vision of himself as the undeserving object of God's grace, saved from eternally ongoing destruction by the Messiah and his atoning death, in his place realizes that in comparison with his salvation, the distinction between Jew and Gentile is insignificant. Why? Because all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Isaiah, faced with a comparable display of God's holiness, said, "Woe is me, for I am undone," in Isaiah 6:5. Jew and Gentile are equally undone before the Messiah. The Messiah destroys the enmity by showing Jew and Gentile equally needy, at the foot of the execution stake. This is what Shaul means by saying that in the Messiah there is neither Jew nor Gentile. And yet, this does not ignore or invalidate the structure by which all has been established. How many times have you heard as a justification, Galatians 3:28, "Well, we don't have to do these things because there's neither Jew nor Gentile anymore." If that's the case, you're neither male nor female anymore. Just going by Scripture, if you accept one reality, then you have to accept the others that go with it. Because it's in the same sentence. Anyways, that isn't what that means. Shaul addresses this aspect in both his first letter to Corinth and his letter in Rome. To Rome. Regarding status specifically, conversion. There is no messianic conversion law within the new covenant. Jews don't have to convert. Because the issue of conversion in the new covenant is circumcision. Prior, if you wanted to align yourself with Israel and partake in the lifestyle, circumcision was required. It was not optional. Acts 15 addresses this very issue. And Shaul conveys the results in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 17. "Only let each person live the life the Lord has assigned him, and live it in the condition he was in when God called him." Keeping in mind, if you were Jewish when you were called, you remain Jewish. If you're not Jewish and you are called, you remain whatever. "This is the rule I laid down in all the congregations. Was someone already circumcised when he was called? Then he should not try to remove the marks of his circumcision." Try undoing that once it's been done. "Was someone uncircumcised when he was called? He shouldn't undergo circumcision. Being circumcised means nothing, and being uncircumcised means nothing. What does mean something is keeping God's commandments. Each person should remain in the condition he was in when he was called." So let me go on a bit of a tangent here for a minute. He's saying here circumcision means nothing. But is it still applicable today? And I will tell you, yes, it is. If you are Jewish, you are to honor God's commands and circumcise your male children. That hasn't changed. If you're Jewish, you remain Jewish. And you do what applies to the Jewish people. But this does not mean that you have to convert and become circumcised if you accept Messiah. That was the issue of Acts 15. Moving on in Ephesians chapter 2, verse 17, after this lengthy explanation of being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel. Verse 17, also. Where there's an also, that means there's more. When he came, he announced his good news, shalom to you far off and shalom to those nearby. When Yeshua came, he preached the gospel to those far off. I gave you examples of Gentiles that he came in contact with. But his message was to the Jewish people to start with. News that through him, we both have access in one spirit to the Father. Verse 19, so then, you are no longer foreigners and strangers. On the contrary, you are fellow citizens with God's people and members of God's family. This idea of foreigner and strangers, Shaul uses these words, I believe, intentionally. Because throughout Torah, it talks about the foreigner and the stranger residing with people in the land. And he's, in essence, making or drawing that conclusion, you are no longer foreigners or strangers. Yet circumcision is not required, at least the physical circumcision. On the contrary, you are fellow citizens with God's people and members of God's family. You have been built on the foundation of the emissaries and of the prophets, with the cornerstone being Yeshua, the Messiah himself. In union with him, the whole building is held together, and it is growing into a holy temple in union with the Lord. Yes, in union with him, you yourselves are being built together into a spiritual dwelling place. So consider this dynamic. You have become fellow citizens with the Jewish people. In other words, you have been brought into the commonwealth of Israel. This does not mean you are bringing in your own structure, but are embracing the structure you are coming into. I'm making this point because I want to pause for a moment and go back in time. Prior to coming here, as I ask you this question, when you became a believer, were you brought in to a life embracing that which Shaul describes? The commonwealth of Israel. Think about that for a minute. What does that mean? Rob, is the commonwealth of Israel? I'm not sure what King James refers to in Ephesians chapter 2. Hold on a second. Okay, let's look at fellow citizens with God in verse 19. Household of God, okay. One roof, so to speak. Commonwealth, I was looking for national life, actually. Verse 12, at that time, you had no Messiah. You were estranged from the national life of Israel. Commonwealth. Knew it was in there somewhere. You were foreigners to the covenants embodying God's promises. You were in this world without hope and without God. Again, go back. Is this what you were brought into? Shaul identifies what the elements of the life are in his letter to Israel. What are the elements of this national life, this commonwealth of Israel? First, it conveys that they were made God's children. The Shekinah, the glory of God, has been with them. The covenants are theirs, likewise the giving of the Torah, the temple service, and the promises of the patriarchs. All of this embodies the national life of Israel, what you would be confronted with on a regular basis. My question, did you experience this when you first became believers? Or is it something that you had to search for? That you had to search out and see, well, what is he talking about? Where can I find this? What am I looking for? It's important not to lose sight of what Adonai has established for the body of Messiah. It has not discarded everything he has established, first through the nation of Israel, ultimately to be experienced by the nations. Yet we don't see the embracing response. What do we see? We see replacement. We see changes. We see creating new things that, if you had to, how do I put this? If you had to expend the effort to create something different for something that already existed, why would you be wasting your time? You're keeping in mind the answer. The Tanakh often has the salvation of Gentiles in view. Many places, Genesis 12, Genesis 18, 22, Genesis 26, Isaiah 11, 19, 54, 60. I go on. The strongest impact of this idea on the consciousness of observant Jews comes from Zechariah 14:9. V'nei mar v'haya Adonai v'melech al kol ha'aretz v'yom ha'hu v'yom ha'hu yeyei Adonai e'achad u'shemo u'shemo. He will be king over all the world. Not just king over Israel. And while Zechariah 14, 16 through 19 proves that eventually the new covenant worship will be far more Jewish in character than it is now, the present verse and the new covenant references given in this note and what I'm sharing with you show that the final form of God's chosen people includes Gentiles who have not converted to Judaism. What is the promise of Zechariah 14, 16? All the nations will go up to worship God when? Sukkot. On Sukkot. Not Christmas time. Not Easter. Not whatever. And the great part of it, you don't have to convert. There is no conversion. Consider the warnings of Adonai towards his own people. Because if he did not spare his own people, whom he called, why would he spare the nations for the same actions? Well, you're exempt. You don't have to do that because. Hosea chapter 4. Hear the word of Adonai, people of Israel. For Adonai has a grievance against the inhabitants of the land. There is no truth, no faithful love, or knowledge of God in the land. Imagine that in the nations. Only swearing and lying, killing and stealing and committing adultery. They break all bounds with one blood crime following another. Therefore the land mourns and everyone living there languishes. Wild animals too, and the birds in the air, even the fish in the sea are removed. But no one should quarrel or rebuke because your people are having to quarrel with the Kohen. Therefore, you will stumble by day, and the prophet will stumble with you at night. I will destroy your mother. My people are destroyed for want of knowledge. Lack of knowledge. Ignorance is not an excuse or a defense. Because you rejected knowledge, I will also reject you as Kohen for me, because you forgot the Torah of your people. I will also forget your children. The more they increased in number, the more they sinned against me. I will change their glory into shame. How about Isaiah 5, starting in verse 12? They have lutes and lyres, drums and flutes, and wine at their parties. but they pay no attention to how Adonai works and never look at what his hands have made. For such lack of knowledge, my people go into exile. This is also why their respected men starve, and their masses are parched with from thirst. Therefore, Sheol has enlarged itself and opened its limitless jaws. And down go their nobles and masses, along with their noises and revels. Well, that's for Israel. That's for, because they're beholden to God's commandments and everything. But are the warnings ever any different than what Yeshua conveys? Because he starts off well here. For God so loved the world that he gave his only unique Son, so that everyone who trusts in him may have eternal life instead of being utterly destroyed. This verse stands out, people convey it, but it goes on, for God did not send his Son into the world to judge the world, but rather so that through him the world might be saved. Those who trust in him are not judged. Those who do not trust have been judged already, in that they have not trusted in the one who is God's only unique Son. Now this is the judgment. The light has come into the world, but people love the darkness rather than the light. Why? Yeshua asks. Because their actions were wicked. For everyone who does evil things hates the light and avoids it, so that his actions won't be exposed. But everyone who does what is true comes to the light, so that all may see that his actions are accomplished through God. Adonai's plan for the nations is still going forward, in doing as Yeshua shared with Yochanan. I want you to keep in mind before I go into this, that again, it doesn't matter whether you're a Jew or Gentile. All have sinned. Therefore, the judgment is equal for everyone. So this is what Yeshua said through someone who spoke with Yochanan the Immerser. Go tell Yochanan the Immerser, you are hearing and seeing. The blind are seeing again. The lame are walking. People with Zaharetz are being cleansed. The deaf are hearing. The dead are being raised. The good news is being told to the poor. And how blessed is anyone not offended by me. And yet today, we are seeing apostasy occurring right before our eyes. We see many in the body of Messiah falling away. One such occurrence, which has been percolating for some time, has come into its own maturity. I'm speaking of the United Methodist Church and their recent announcement that they will form into two different entities. The division is based on the position regarding LGBTQ, specifically the difference over same-sex marriage and the inclusion of gay clergy. The plan is to break into two, with the one group not supporting the inclusions be identified as traditionalist Methodist. Of the nearly 7 million United Methodists in the United States alone, more than half of them embrace the non-traditionalist view. Sheol talks of a great falling away that must occur prior to the return of Messiah in 2 Thessalonians 2, but in connection with the coming of the Lord Yeshua and our gathering together to meet him, we ask you, brothers, not to be easily shaken in your thinking or anxious because of a spirit or of a spoken message or a letter supposedly from us claiming that the day of the Lord has already come. Don't let anyone deceive you in any way. For the day will not come until after the apostasy has come and the man who separates himself from Torah has been revealed, The apostasy is occurring. The separation from Torah has long since been established. It's not just one event that will occur, but many. This is but one that you can see, and if you have the knowledge of Adonai, can recognize. It's through the lack of knowledge that we perish. Ultimately, if you think about it, they have created their own path, not making or not paying attention to the knowledge given by Adonai. The mission continues, whereby both Jew and Gentile are to be working together, one coming alongside the other, for which the order has been established. In his proper order, you, in essence, have the two gates Yeshua describes in his Sermon on the Mount. Go in through the narrow gate, for the gate that leads to destruction is wide, and the road broad, and many travel it. But it is the narrow gate and a hard road that leads to life, and only a few find it. What have we seen here by this one example? Inclusion versus distinction. Well, we want to be a big tent for everyone, because there's many ways to God, and it's okay if you don't believe this or not, because God is love and He's forgiveness and everything. But it's okay. The imagery of the gates was not lost on those who were listening to Yeshua, because in Jerusalem there are many gates and with different dimensions. So they were provided with a visual they could understand because they lived it. So when we look at this promise to the nations, it goes all the way back to Genesis 12, when Avram was first called out and would ultimately become the father of the nation of Israel. When he was told, "I will make of you a great nation, I will bless you, and I will make your name great, and you are to be a blessing." Then Adonai says, "I will bless those who bless you, but I will curse anyone who curses you, and here is the key. And by you all the families of the earth will be blessed." All the nations will be blessed. Yet the mission is for both Jew and Gentile. So what's for next week? If there is a mission, there must be a message. So what's the message of the mission? That will be next week. So if everybody will please rise.